recess, I was downstairs testifying for my favorite bill of the session, and I wanted to get up here and be able to deal with my second and third favorite bills of the session, and so I didn't want to miss these today. Let's begin with work session on Senate Bill 50. I will open that. Council?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Senate Bill 50 modifies the law requiring the court to award attorney's fees to the prevailing plaintiff in certain actions which only limited damages are sought. Mr. Chairman?
Okay. And where we left it last time was?
Mr. Chairman, we received public testimony.
Okay. We have before us, would you pass those on, please? The dash. You're receiving the dash A5 amendments. Let me explain these. They come to us from Representative Krupp. He's distributing them right now. They relate to attorney fees in agents' contested case proceedings. I will tell you that I received a letter from Senator Bryan indicating that he would receive these. He would approve these on the Senate side. I sent a copy of these to the Department of Justice since they do relate to attorney fees in administrative hearings, and I will represent to you that we received word back from the Department of Justice that they did not have any opposition to these. They consider that these effectively restate the current state of the law. In any event, they didn't see any major policy change in this. So they were not opposed. Let me ask, is there anybody here today on the A5s? Okay. Otherwise, I told Representative Kropp we would consider those for amendment into the bill. Representative Werbelow.
Thank you, sir. I have a question. I thought I just heard you say that the Attorney General's office, so they don't have any problem with them because they basically just restate the present law. If that's all they do, why are we doing them?
Well, I can't answer that. I can't tell you that they are exactly on point with what is current law, but that basically the gist was they didn't see this as threatening a major change in attorney fees and administrative proceedings. They were comfortable with these. They certainly did not oppose them. And Senator Bryant said that he would receive them favorably for concurrence in the Senate. That's all I can represent to you. They are not my amendments, but I said that I would bring them to the committee.
Chairman.
Representative Witt.
I'd move the dash 5 amendments to Senate Bill 50.
Representative Witt moves the dash 5 amendments to Senate Bill 50. Is there discussion? Any objection? Okay, so ordered. We have then before us the dash A6 amendments. Council? Oh, okay. Who can speak to these? Oh, these are the ones from Mr. Marquis that we are not proceeding on. Okay.
I did have a question.
Yeah.
You didn't give me time to...
I'm sorry. Okay. It's before us now.
Yes. On Section 5, is this award of attorney's fees to the employer to be paid by the Department of Consumer and Business Affairs?
As I read it, it is.
Shouldn't we have a fiscal? Well, could be substantial.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative,
I guess I'd, like Representative Werbelow, I'm seeing these for the first time. I guess my response would be if the attorneys for the Department of the Workers' Compensation Board or the Department of Consumer and Business Services, who is the Attorney General's office, is not concerned about the impact of these amendments because they think they may already be under the obligations set forth here, I would argue that they probably don't consider them to have a considerable fiscal impact, or they would be here screaming their lungs out, I would suspect. So, I mean, that would be my understanding as to why they're not here. But I think the representative from Ashland raises a valid point, but I think that it probably isn't that big of a deal, and that's why we don't have it in front of us.
Representative Witt? Okay, Representative Werbelow, then Representative Witt.
I just wanted to say I don't think this is the present law that the Department of Consumer and Business Affairs, Business Services, I'm sorry, now pays attorney's fees, but maybe we could have somebody who knows that answer. But if so, it wouldn't be what they're already experiencing.
I'm sorry.
And Mr. Chairman, it seems to me any fiscal impact is purely speculative on this point. And if anything, I think this, the Dash 5 amendments will cause these agencies to be somewhat more cautious to making sure that their rulings have some reasonable basis in fact and in law.
Well, and I'm going to second that notion, especially if you look at lines 16 and 17 and 18, that the award is predicated on a finding that the department did not have a reasonable basis in fact or law for issuing the citation or other order for proposing the civil penalty. My bet is that the Department of Justice and DCBS would tell us that that represents to them little fiscal threat. They're going to tell us that they always have a reasonable basis in fact or law for issuing a citation. And so I think probably along the lines that Representative Witt has suggested, this may be more a something for the board to consider in making issuing citations and taking actions on civil penalties as just a prospect out there. I doubt that you're going to find that this would have, by analysis, a fiscal impact that it would be other than speculative. Yes.
Actually, I would hope that that would be the case. However, it would be easily determined by going back and looking at past board decisions as to what the instance was of finding the department was issuing orders based on bad law or no law or whatever.
Representative Williams.
Mr. Chairman, it may be that they don't feel it's a substantial change in the law in reference to the reading of ORS 20-105, which says that in any civil action, suit or proceeding in front of them, and then it lists essentially all the courts within the state, the court shall award reasonable attorney's fees to a party against whom a claim, defense, or grant, or appeal, or review is asserted if that party is a prevailing party in the proceeding, and then it goes on to say, or that there was no objectively reasonable basis for asserting the claim, defense, or ground for appeal. So at least my suspicion is that they operate under this statute anyway, and with respect to the administrative law portion, they already, in another context, they already use that as the basis of their standard in the first place, and that's why they don't believe this is a substantial change.
I think that's a good point, because that standard exists as to legal actions. This places a standard in administrative actions where it doesn't presently expressly exist, but I think you're probably right. That drives the agency's actions. Are you okay with that?
Yeah, I my only concern was I don't want the department coming here in 2 or 4 years and saying, because we passed this, we've incurred this additional expense, and we have to find the, well, not we, but the next legislature will have to find them.
Well, I guess the response to the department if they come is going to be, why are you issuing citations or civil penalties that don't do not have a reasonable basis in fact or law, and that'd be for them to explain. Okay. Representative Lowe.
I don't like the Dash 5 amendments, and I will be opposing them.
Well, actually, we already moved them into the bill. But
well, I will, please, can you put my objection to them on the record, please?
Yes.
We did.
I actually pounded the gavel.
Because I said I had comments because I hadn't read them.
That was after there were
any objections.
It was fast gavel.
Well, I'd like to change my vote. Did we vote or did we just do it in bank?
We did it without objection.
On that. Well, okay. I got an objection.
Yeah, well, I guess the chair requests unanimous consent to rescind the action by which the committee move the Dash 5 amendments into the bill to give an opportunity for Representative Lowe and Representative Werbelow, if that's the case, to make their objections for the record. Is there any objection?
I object.
Oh, well, no.
No.
I don't want to object to that.
The rule.
I'm still objecting.
Now the chair requests unanimous consent. We'll rule that objection out of order.
Can I have an app now?
So we have the bill before us now without amendment, and we have the Dash 5s before us. I think I need another motion on the Dash 5s.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Witt.
I move the Dash 5 amendments to House Bill 7, Senate Bill 50.
Okay. Representative Witt moves the Dash 5 amendments to Senate Bill 50. Now, is there objection? Representative Werbelow and Representative Lowe. Okay? Any other? All right. Dash 5 amendments are back in the bill. We have the bill before us as amended. then by the dash five amendments, the engrossed version of the bill. I had understood there was some discussion about the dollar amount at, I'm looking for the engrossed version. At $5,000 or $5,500, I guess before we take the motion on the bill, I want to make sure that if there's a motion to conceptually amend the bill to increase that to $5,500, that we accommodate that. Otherwise, we'll move the bill as it stands. Representative Witt.
Mr. Chairman, can I move the bill at this point?
I move the bill.
All right. I'd like to move the bill right now. The engrossed version is at $5,000.
It is.
Mr. Chairman, I would move Senate Bill 50 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Williams.
Mr. Chair,
I'm sorry. Let me restate the motion. Representative Witt moves Senate Bill 50A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Representative Williams.
Mr. Chairman, I've been in discussion with both the bar and individuals representing the insurance industry on this issue, and I know that there are some members of this committee who would support a higher amount than the $5,000 as it's currently incorporated in the engrossed version of the bill. At the same time, based on testimony that we had from the bar groups, the insurance industry, which, and we talked about that 3%, I think it's not unreasonable that the amount be increased to $5,500. And I have actually, at the request of myself, council has come forward with some comparable states, and although they have some different provisions in their law that apply, you know, I think it's fair to say that in this area, Oregon is low by comparison. I think an increase to $5,500 is not an unreasonable one, and I would ask Representative Witt if he would allow at least that motion to increase to 55 to first go forward.
Mr. Chairman, my understanding from talking to people who participated in this process on the Senate side is this was negotiated to $5,000 on the Senate side. And when people came back and wanted to take it back up to $7,500, you know, I'd like to let the committee vote on the motion that's been put forward.
Let me see. I think what might be in order would be, if you want to press it, pursue that, would be a motion to amend the motion to increase to conceptually to $5,500. Well, we have to do that by unanimous consent.
Mr. Chairman, I'd just say that I have a note here, again, confirming from Senator Bryant, because there's been a lot of talking about this deal. Senator Bryant was of the opinion that there was never any formal deal on the Senate side. And because of that issue, I've gone to him on two different occasions to confirm that. That is essentially what he said. So I'm not necessarily going to worry about whether or not there was a deal on any particular bill. We seem to have that conversation sometimes. Well, we seem to have that conversation sometimes in this committee, but I think based on all the evidence that I've seen, I don't think it's an unreasonable thing to increase it to 5,500. So although we are in the midst of discussing this issue, I guess I would ask the chairman to suspend the rules to allow the conceptual amendment, and if so granted, I would then amend Representative Witt's motion to increase the amount on lines 6 and 16 from 5,000 to 5,500.
Okay. Representative, I'm trying to handle these. Boy, I tell you, poor Mr. Mason really is.
He's spinning in his grave.
Representative Witt requests unanimous
Williams.
I'm sorry, Williams, geez. Requests unanimous consent to suspend the rules to allow the conceptual amendment of the bill on lines 6 and 16 to increase that amount to $5,500. And the purpose for the suspension of the rules would not be to amend it, but actually to receive a motion to amend the motion that is before us. Is there objection to suspension of the rules?
Yeah, unfortunately, Mr. Chairman, I mean, I made a commitment in terms of what I would support on this bill, and I haven't been in any way relieved of that commitment. And to change the $5,000 would cause me to breach that commitment.
Okay.
Oh, we're just at suspending the rules, and I'll suspend the rules and make my statement to a motion.
But I don't think Representative Witt is going to allow suspension of the rules. So, Mr. Chairman, to avoid that procedural challenge, I guess, with his motion before us, if we vote on the bill and the vote fails, then we could
reconsider.
We could move for reconsideration, and at that point, without suspension to take the conceptual amendment, we could bring an actual amendment forward.
At a later time.
At a later time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Or the other option would be to go ahead and move the bill out. It's going back to the Senate for concurrence, and Senator Bryant can do it over there.
If he chooses not to concur.
If he chooses not to concur.
Well, we've adopted the Dash A5.
Yeah, we have adopted the Dash A5, so that will require concurrence on the Senate. Well, let's go ahead and I'm willing to follow the lead of the committee in this. Let's take a vote on the motion before us, which is to move Senate Bill 50 as amended by the A5s, but otherwise as it is before us. Oh, Representative Werbelow?
You want comments on the
yes,
motion?
Yes, I do, on the motion, yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm, yes. I was going to take a vote. If you want to comment, I'll change the comments.
Actually, Representative Williams did look into this in neighboring states, and Idaho, which all of you are well aware of, is no flaming liberal progressive state, has a limit of $25,000. Washington, our other neighbor, has $10,000. I think both $5,000 and actually $5,500 is absolutely absurd, and we're letting the insurance company rule dictate to how we make this policy decisions, and that's very troubling to me. So I won't be voting for this bill.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Just to comment on that, while those amounts are accurate, as stated by Representative Rubelow, they also have some other provisions of their law that I want to make the committee very clear of with respect to how those offers are made, and they do have some loser pay reciprocity provisions tied within those statutes. I think it's instructive that the amounts are as high as they are, and you know the bills or the statutes from those other states are here for anyone to examine. But I think the issue of raising it a modest amount, as I said before, the 3% inflation factor that we were given, if we were to track this according to inflation, would put the amount at $5,680. I don't believe an increase to $5,500 is an inappropriate one. I think it's prudent, and I would think that it's for the committee to end up. And I recognize Representative Rubelow's strong feelings about where this amount should be, but I think it's a prudent increase. So that's where I stand.
Well, I tell you, the amount with which we struggle over $5,000 or $50,000, I'm glad this is not a Ways and Means Committee. We'd be having trouble with some of our budgets.
Maybe that's their problem, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Werbelow.
I would just make a comment. Actually, if you look at inflation, I think you have to take into consideration health care inflation, which has been much higher than normal inflation. But in the interest of trying to reach a compromise, even though I still think the figure is too low, as I told Representative Williams, I would go to $6,000 holding my nose, but not as low as $5,500.
The old quotient verdict. Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, this bill isn't about insurance companies dictating anything, and I don't think that a comment was really appropriate. It's about setting good policy relative to plaintiffs and defendants in these types of suits. And I would note that under Oregon law, as Representative Williams just pointed out, we do not have reciprocity, as some of these other states have that might have higher limits, that under this statute that only plaintiffs have the on a claim, only plaintiffs have the opportunity of getting their attorney's fees should they prevail. Defendants don't have that opportunity unless they've asserted a counterclaim. And I think based upon that, to raise this above $5,000 I think is inappropriate. It simply puts pressure upon defendants to settle. And there's no reasonable way in which those defendants can get their attorney's fees if they win. And raising the dollar limit higher than that just opens us up to higher claims and putting that pressure upon the defendants to settle even though they believe they're right in the case. Without that kind of reciprocity, I won't support anything above $5,000.
Okay. We have before us the motion. Is there any further discussion? The motion, again, is to...
I need to declare a conflict.
In what respect?
Well, I've got a claim pending.
So noted. Senate Bill 50, the motion is to move Senate Bill 50 as amended by the Dash A5 amendments to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Please call the roll.
Representative Backlund?
Aye.
Representative Werbelow? Representative Edwards?
No.
Representative Lowe?
No.
Representative Walker?
No.
Representative Lowe?
Yes.
No.
Representative Webb?
Yes.
Well, I said I would follow the lead of the committee, and chair votes no. Motion fails.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Williams.
I changed my vote from no to aye and served notice of possible reconsideration.
Representative Williams changes his vote from no to aye, serves notice of possible reconsideration. We'll take that up at a later time. All right, we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 50. Oh, we're doing fine.
Weren't we voting on the 5,000? Can't we vote on the... What?
Where are you at, Kathy?
I guess...
Okay, now to something simple. We'll open a work session on Senate Bill 756. Counsel.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Senate Bill 756A would establish the Oregon Qualified Tuition Savings Program and the Oregon Qualified Tuition Savings Board. The committee took public testimony on this. Some questions were out there, and also some additional amendments were being drafted. Before you have the -10s and the -13s that I understand are being put forward today.
Okay. The -10s and -13s. Representative Edwards, do you want to describe these
sure.
while I ask?
Just,
where's Raleigh?
Just briefly.
Oh, okay. Come on.
7.5 cents.
Please. Mr. Chair, the -10s were an issue that TIA-CREF raised when they came and testified before about contract language. It's a clarification that they're interested in seeing in the bill. And the -813 set up, there's one technical change referencing a new, the actual part of federal law that's in the -813 line 3. 529E sub 5 is the actual law in which this bill draws its power federally. And the rest of A13 addresses allowing families to have a $2,000 contribution deduction by the year 2001. And the rationale for that was to allow this program, basically by the time this becomes law, I'm assuming this will pass, becomes law, it would take at least about that time before this thing is actually offered to Oregonians. So at that time, families can ask for a $2,000 deduction from their state taxable income when they put in money to this plan.
And we have before us a revenue impact
yes.
statement.
And the revenue impact reflects some of that what I just described on the -13, which basically puts the revenue impact largely to zero this session or this next upcoming biennium. And as we see more people sign up, you will see more people taking the deduction and a deferral on the interest earned. That's, again, one of the key points of this savings program.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Mary Ann Guest, representing the State Treasurer's Office. We had concerns, and we actually prepared information based on the original bill that came over that it was tax deferred only, and we had a concern that it was not as attractive to participants and that we needed to do something further. I think Representative Randall Edwards has definitely gone a step further by adding a exemption for contributions up front. We did want to point out, though, that not one other state has that provision. Most states have college savings plans do have the state tax exemption for interest earnings. Some states do add a contribution exemption to the state's exemption on the interest earnings. And in those cases, the plans are very successful. We did find with most plans that if it's a tax deferral only and there's only three of them, they were not successful. People did not participate in them. We have no data to back up the success of a contribution exemption plus a tax deferral program. There's not one other state does this, so I'm not sure how that plays out. I know it's an incentive for people to participate, but I'm not sure how the numbers play out. We would prefer to have a state tax exemption. And the numbers that I've added, if you compare us, Oregon to other states, when you look at the revenue impact that was prepared on 756, I talked to Ed Waters, and he said the impact number would be half of these numbers that were provided to the committee. So you're not talking for a state tax exemption, you're not talking a lot of money. He had originally prepared the revenue impact based on participants being 7,500 in the first year and 4,000 each year after that. No state has reached that type of participation unless they're offering both a state tax exemption and a contribution exemption. So he went with lower numbers, so I think that it really does make it reasonable. I'm not sure what Representative Edwards, what the revenue impact was in the later biennium after this was in effect with the contribution increases, but I know that this particular revenue impact will be minimal, and I think it also, the success is out there with the other plans across the United States, that they do get a high level of participation with a tax exemption.
Okay. Representative Edwards, and then Representative Werbelow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate those comments. I think it's a question of where we are in the session at this point, and I spoke to many in the financial community talking about the idea of having a deduction on the front end to try to attract people to the program, which is reflected in the A13. And I think what the model there is the fact that the fact that you give a $2,000 deduction when you put your money into the IRA, assuming you have a certain income level. So this is really an incentive to get more people to participate, which I think we all agree is what the whole concept behind this is, to get people to participate, put money away, and hopefully have adequate savings for their child's education.
Representative Werbelow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, this question might be for Representative Edwards. I'm looking at the amendments, and I assume the amendment on the dash 13, yes, right, on page 2 came about because of the discussion we had in the last hearing about who gets the credit. My question, I wish this would have solved it, but what we really are contemplating it here, I think, is an individual, or if they're married, then each of the spouses get $1,000. What about grandparents? A lot of times grandparents give to these accounts.
Thank you for the question, Mr. Chair. This actually would apply to grandparents as well. So they can also get a $2,000 contribution deduction if they put in $2,000. So they also can get the $2,000.
And if your neighbor gives $2,000, they can take the credit or issue?
That's correct.
So everybody, except if you're a married couple, then you split it.
If Mr. Chair, if I may, if you're filing separately, and that's only, and that actually standard practice. I talked to Ledge Council about how they split the $2,000.
Marriage penalty. That's
well,
another form.
Thank you.
Cool. Representative Wells.
So to further understand this, and as I understand, when the money comes out, then there will be tax paid on this $2,000 plus tax on the interest at that time, or
just on the interest accumulated in the Mr.
So there'll never be any tax paid on this original money then that's put in.
No, that's part of the incentive to get people into the program.
Okay. Yeah. All right. I guess I would note you mentioned it in passing, but also the amendments, the dash 13 amendments on line 3 correct the reference to the Internal Revenue Code section that was correct, but this one is better.
Right, Mr. Chair. This, in fact, Ledge Council said if we didn't make that correction now, we'd just change it in a tax correction bill coming out next session. So this just clarifies it up front, since we're going to amend the bill, seem reasonable to do. Mr. Chair, are we in work session?
We are in work session.
I ask for the adoption of the A10 amendment into Senate Bill 756.
Representative Edwards moves the dash 10 amendments, A10 amendments to Senate Bill 756. Is there discussion on the motion? Any objections? Okay. Barry?
Mr. Chair, I ask for the adoption of the A13 amendments into Senate Bill 756.
Representative Edwards moves the dash A13 amendments into Senate Bill 756. Is there discussion on that motion? All right, hearing none. Is there any representative for the one?
I have a discussion. You know, I think this bill has tremendous merit, and I think we need to pass something like this. However, we could be opening up the barn door here if everybody's getting a $2,000 credit. And in fact, as I was looking at the fiscal, and I can see in 2003-05, it's over $1 million general fund impact, which I think that means, of course, it has to go to Ways and Means also if we have that big of an impact, mm-hmm. we will have. But, you know, I think a lot of people may stop and think about that impact when they're thinking about voting for the idea and forgetting the merits. And I'm just curious about why we didn't follow what other states have done where they didn't give credits, but we've had discussions which wouldn't have this impact on a general fund.
Well, my recollection is the...
It's like a deduction instead of a credit or...
This is a deduction.
It's a deduction from federal income.
State income. The way the Dash 13 is, it's a deduction off your...
A subtraction from federal income.
It's not
tax,
yeah. Mm-hmm. And then, the core of this whole program beyond that, that's to help incentivize people to get into it, is the fact that over time, the interest that accumulates on the money that's put in here, so if you put in... You can put in a substantial amount of money. I've seen states allowing up to $100,000 per child. Therefore, that money, as it grows, isn't taxed, state or federal. Then when it comes out, there's a tax on the money at the child's rate, both at the federal and the state level. And that's been sort of the core of this whole savings program, which, again, Congress contemplated a couple of years ago.
Representative Lowe.
I have a question about the whole bill scheme. I'm in love with this bill, but I have a... There's nothing in here that outlines who the beneficiary is, if it's a young person or an old person. So as I'm reading this bill with new eyes, I'm wondering... Given the way the bill is drafted, and especially looking at Section 9, well, I couldn't start chunking away $2K a year for myself if I wanted to go to, like, the Louvre Art School when I finish my political career. Is there anything in here that makes the beneficiary age specific, or... if I wanted to change the account owner to myself or something like that, then I'd get all that money tax-free. That's the intent of the bill?
Mr. Chair, you're raising a few points, but this again is driven by federal tax policy, and the federal tax law allows even adults to do it. Just like if you want to go to the art school, you could actually set this up for yourself and start putting money in. Want to go to graduate school. That's sort of the nice thing about this. It isn't for everybody in a situation like I am where I have a 6, 5, and a 1-year-old. It's actually for people who are looking to continuing ed. You can use it for community college, vocational school. So it's not just limited to your traditional situation, I guess, as I find myself.
Excuse me, is there an art school in Maui? I just thought I'd ask.
Take you a while to accumulate that tuition. Yeah. Is there any further discussion on the Dash A13? We have the motion before us to move those into the bill. Is there any objection? Okay, so ordered. Then we have before us the bill as amended by the Dash A10 and the Dash A13 amendments. Let me also note we have on the bill at this point a subsequent referral to the House Revenue Committee. I've spoken with the Speaker's office, and based on the revenue impact for the forthcoming biennium, that is a zero revenue impact, the committee by motion and affirmative vote of the majority of the committee can rescind the subsequent referral to revenue and move this out to the floor at the committee's pleasure. Otherwise, it goes to revenue for... Goes to revenue. So we're getting one way or the other.
I move that we rescind the referral to revenue.
Representative Edwards moves the referral to subsequent referral to revenue committee on Senate Bill 756 be rescinded. Discussion on that, Representative Witt.
Mr. Chairman, did I hear you right to say that the committee would have to find that there was no revenue impact?
No, actually, I think there was there's a de minimis. It's sort of like we don't have quite the when it comes to fiscal impact. You know, 50,000 is the de minimis threshold beyond which the bills have to go to Ways and Means. When it comes to revenue impacts, I'm not aware of any bright line, $50,000 or less. But when we were looking at this bill having a possible revenue impact of as much as $27,000, we were still given the green light if this committee chose to do so, to rescind the revenue referral. Certainly that is the case where the revenue impact for the coming biennium is zero.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to oppose the motion, not because I'm opposed to the bill. I'm very much in favor of the bill, but as you know, Mr. Chairman, in revenue, we're looking at lots of different deductions and credits that we're trying to responsibly balance in terms of how it will impact state revenues, and I think this bill should go to revenue and be put in that mix so the revenue committee can make responsible decisions in terms of those measures in front of the revenue committee relative to credits and deductions.
Any other discussion on that, Representative Werbelow?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would agree with Representative Witt, even though there's very little, if no impact in the 99-2001 biennium, that certainly doesn't happen in the 2001 or 2003, which means we are binding future legislators, and I think that it does need to at least get a look at present revenue because they also know what else they're doing over there.
Well,
and I would agree.
We'll see about
with
that.
Representative Witt.
I don't know, Representative Witt, Representative Williams, here on the committee.
With three members on that committee, I'm not sure that's an accurate statement.
Take a responsible look.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you
Mr.
for that.
Mr. Chairman, I would agree that Representative Witt certainly has a point here, as does Representative Ublau, and I'd like to see it go to revenue to get massaged correctly.
Representative Edwards reminds me we did have a discussion with Representative Strobeck on the floor, was it last week, where he did agree that at least he didn't oppose the removal of the referral. I don't know if that changes anybody's mind, but that is correct that we had the discussion with him on the floor about the referral of this bill. But I'm happy to, this is democratic process.
May I ask a question about
yes.
the process? Given the time constraints, I mean, revenue continues to operate, does it not? And we have special grace or whatever.
It does indeed.
Yeah. So it's not going to hurt the bill to make it.
Well, there's always a risk, I guess. At this point in the session, we have the referral to the House Revenue Committee, and then since we've amended it, it will from there it would go to the floor. It would have to go back to the Senate Revenue Committee for concurrence. And so it is a question. I'm not sure that it's critical, but it is a question of timing.
Well, do we have a vote before to send it?
We have a motion before us to rescind the subsequent referral to the House Revenue Committee.
Okay.
Let's call the roll on that. Unless there's any further discussion,
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Representative.
I'd like to add just one thing. That is, if the standard in terms of referral Ways and Means is de minimis, and that's been typically interpreted, I think you said, to be $50,000. You know, if, in view of the fact there's not a clear standard here, but it would seem to me a comparable standard would apply. We've often said in revenue that as we make decisions relative to tax credits, it's very similar to making a Ways and Means decision in terms of spending money. And I think a similar standard, maybe not formally, but informally, should apply here. And when we're talking about 13 or 15 times that amount that would require a referral to Ways and Means, we're certainly not, doesn't seem to me anyhow, respecting that kind of a standard if we send this directly to the floor. So that together with the reason that I think the Revenue Committee has to be able to balance these things responsibly, I'm going to oppose the referral to the floor.
And that's fine. Just in response to that, though, if this was a fiscal impact statement showing zero in the biennium, it would not go to Ways and Means, even if there were a fiscal impact projected out to subsequent biennia. So in that respect, if we look at this as analogous to a fiscal impact statement, this would not have a referral to Ways and Means on it because of the impact. Because the impact is not in the next succeeding biennium. Okay. Representative Backlund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I find this discussion very, very interesting and really important. I think I would not want to risk, frankly, this bill. By if there is a risk, any risk at all, by referring it to revenue. I think the bill is a good bill. I think it's something that Oregon should have done a long time ago, and we have the opportunity now to do that, and I'm not interested in risking that, so I would be interested in moving this directly to the floor and not to the Revenue Committee.
Okay. Anything, anybody else?
Well, I guess Vic has convinced me.
Representative Walker?
Well, Mr. Chair, I have a bill that's down in revenue and hasn't seen the light of day, so it's sort of like ways and means kind of gets lost, and this is a good concept. It's been worked over pretty thoroughly, so I've got one vote. I'm going to vote to just send this out to the floor.
So the motion before us, just so we're square, is this is not the motion to send it to the floor yet. This is a motion to rescind the subsequent referral, and that's all that's before us right now. Let's take a roll.
Aye.
Representative Edwards?
Aye.
Representative Lowe?
Aye.
Representative Urbelow?
Yes, with reluctance, but Dick also.
I mean,
okay, yes.
Representative
Walker?
Yeah.
Representative Lowe? No.
Representative Williams?
Aye.
Representative Witt?
No.
Aye. So the motion, the subsequent referral to the Revenue Committee is removed. We have the bill before us. Representative Edwards?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I ask that we send Senate Bill 756 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Edwards moves Senate Bill 756 to the floor with a, as amended, to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And again, if it's any comfort to anyone, Senator Hartung on the Senate side is also aware of what's gone on, or at least the amendments being proposed here, too, so he's being the Revenue Committee on the Senate side. This is not going to be blindsiding anybody by doing this. Okay, any further discussion? Let's take a roll call.
Representative Backlund?
Aye.
Representative Bedford?
Aye.
Representative Lowe?
Aye.
Representative Urbelow?
Yes.
Representative Walker?
Yes.
Yes.
Representative Williams?
Yes.
Representative Witt?
Yes.
Representative?
Yes. Senate Bill 756, as amended, goes to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Representative Edwards, I assume you'd like to carry this?
Yes, sir.
It's yours. Close the work session on Senate Bill 756, and let's go into our last bill of the day. A work session on House Bill 3605. Counsel?
Hey, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, House Bill 3605 would make various changes to the Employer Liability Act in regards especially to wrongful death suits. There are, is at least one amendment before you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. All right, the amendment before us, Mr. Representative Williams, you requested the amendment.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, the Dash 4 amendment simply responds to concerns that I think were rightly raised by people who gave testimony on this bill regarding its retroactivity. This would simply remove the retroactivity portions of the bill in Section 4. And as it says, the provisions under the Act would apply only to claims for relief that arise on or after the effective date of this Act.
So then, as I see it, and I'll invite some folks down here to come up and testify in a minute. I know we're in work session, but I want to make sure we get this fully aired. The bill, as it is before us, would amend the employer liability law in these particulars. It would apply the damage cap on death actions, that is the $500,000 damage cap on non-economic damages in death actions, and it would bring actions under the employer liability law into conformance with the provisions of Chapter 18 relating to contributory fault, comparative negligence that's applicable in other tort actions. It does not have the retroactivity section in it, at least the Dash 4s would take that out. Is that a fair statement?
I believe that's an accurate statement of the effect of the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, we've got some folks that have traveled down here a couple times at least to talk about this. Is anybody here? Nobody? Come on up. Just.
For the record, Mr. Chair, Jennifer Weber for the Oregon Trial Lawyers Association. We don't have anybody here today and wish to make no further comments on the bill.
Okay.
Thank you.
The battle is being engaged on other fronts.
It would appear so, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Shiptak is raising his finger.
Bob, come on up.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'll be very brief this afternoon. I'm Bob Shiptak. I'm Secretary of the Oregon Building Trades Council, representing construction workers throughout the state of Oregon. To my right is Jeff Carlson. He's a field representative for the Iron Workers Local 29 in Portland, Oregon. I just want to state our continued opposition to this bill. It's somewhat difficult to have other employers that we represent come and ask for a piece of legislation that I keep reading and rereading, and it doesn't solve the problems that they've come to the legislature with. These people don't like getting sued. Nobody likes getting sued. I don't think this bill will change that in any shape or form. The only people that I see in reading this bill, and I'm not trying to be flippant, this is a very serious issue, Mr. Chairman, is the only people that really get impacted by this bill are widows, because non-economic damages are capped for widows, and I suspect the surviving, or today we say surviving spouses, but that'll suffice. The other question I have is why the committee's never asked for how many claims there are under this act every year. These are extremely rare instances where there have been serious, very serious injuries or deaths. So that concludes my testimony. That's my thoughts about the whole thing. Mr. Carlson has a few thoughts from the iron workers who have been, as the organization, most impacted by, unfortunately, the Employer Liability Act and having to use it.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair, I have a question first. Yeah. Thank you. Why don't you answer that question for us, Mr. Shiprock? How many of these cases are brought per year, do you know?
I don't have a firm count. That's why I was hopeful that the committee would have asked that question or researched it. I would be surprised if there's over 20 of these a year.
Yes.
Just a guess.
Thank you. Bob, when you were here before, you pointed out, talks about loss of life, and I've asked that question of some people, too, and we had the example here on the TV showing a person was injured. So does this only deal with a person that's lost their life or there's a death? Or does this deal with injuries on the job?
You could ask counsel. My reading of the bill, it applies, non-economic damages portion applies when somebody has been killed at work.
That's a good question. I think I can clarify. The limitation on damages applies only to death claims. I think what does apply across the board to all claims would be the change with regard to the comparative negligence standard. In that respect, it would conform this actions under the Employer Liability Act to the same standard that any other tort action has to meet. That would apply to both injury claims and death claims, but the damage cap applies only to death claims.
Counsel, if I may be heard, Mr. Chairman, members
of
the committee, just to respond to Mr. Shiprock's question, Representative Walker did in fact ask that I look into the number of claims that were made each year, and I called the trial court administrator's office, and they told us they do not keep figures on that. However, I'd like to research that with OSHA, perhaps, and follow it over to the Senate side. Perhaps they may have some data on that.
Okay. Carlson, I think we were...
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jeff Carlson. I'm a business agent for Iron Workers Local 29. We cover our jurisdiction covers the entire state of Oregon, 5.5 counties of southwestern Washington. I think this is a bad bill. Construction is a dangerous game under the best of conditions. And there's so many variables, so many risks out there. And I've been a field iron worker for 26 years, and You know, I've been on several projects in that 26 years where normally the way a job runs, you have a weekly safety meeting, and you address those, usually the general contractors there, and subcontractors. You know, I brought real safety issues up only to be ignored. And, you know, this bill here, the way the law is now, it's one heck of an incentive to keep your ducks in a row to make sure that there is a safe work environment. You know, you implement this change here and you cap it, there's like a bit of a relaxation there, or there could be a tendency for relaxation where safety is concerned. Anyway, this, I just see that this bill could make it possible. You know, it's a matter of money, basically, that we're talking about. But from my standpoint, it's a matter of life and death. And I just think that lives are more important than money. Thank you.
Questions, comments? I guess I would just point out, and I understand this is that, first of all, the cap on injury claims, there is no cap on injury claims, and on economic damages, neither is there any cap. So to the extent that you're looking at medical expenses or other economic claims, loss of earning capacity, those kinds of things, there will be no cap on those. And even in death claims, the economic damages, that is loss of income attributable to the decedent, will not be limited by this bill either. So I respect the fact that there is a limitation in this. I think it may be more limited limitation than your perception of it. But, hey, this is politics and perception is reality. So,
Mr. Chairman, bring up a good point. I am not an attorney. But when I read something like this, my eyes kind of glaze over. But I do see the bottom line in here, and there is a limitation. And so there's a surviving spouse is, you know, she's got to raise, or he or she has to raise a family. And, you know, this here makes it more difficult for them to do that, the way I read it. And like I said, I'm not an attorney.
Just to the point that to the extent that those are economic costs, those are not capped by would not be capped by this amendment. Representative Werbelow?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, I don't think his perception is wrong, because I think if we vote for this bill, what we are saying, and make no mistake, this is what we are saying, that we are saying a work person doesn't have any value to his family or her family that they're leaving behind, except for their medical bills, our future earning capacity. There's a lot more value to that person, to his family, than those economic values. And I would ask people to keep that in mind as they vote on this.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Anybody else wish to speak on House Bill 3605? Well, we are in work session, and we have the Dash 4 amendments.
Mr. Chairman.
The floor is Representative Williams.
I would move the Dash 4 amendments to House Bill 3605, which removes any retroactivity provisions to the bill.
Okay. Representative Williams moves the Dash 4 amendments to House Bill 3605. Is there discussion on the motion?
Well,
Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll vote on the amendments because it's certainly better than the original bill, but I'm a no vote on this bill.
I understand, yeah.
In here.
Okay, so I will take that as no objection to the Dash 4 amendments, but you're right. You'll have another chance to vote on this in just a few minutes. Dash 4 amendments are in the bill. Representative Williams.
Mr. Chairman, I would move House Bill 3605 as amended to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. And I guess I'd like to say I recognize this is a very sensitive and very important issue. What I see this bill doing, frankly, colleagues, is putting this provision of the law, which was enacted prior to our workers' compensation law, in line with current law with respect to both the application of the non-economic damages statute that exists for all other tort liability actions, and secondly, pulling us forward in this bill to the standard of contributory negligence which exists currently within the law for all other actions brought in common law negligence. And I think it's a reasonable step. I do not believe that it's an evisceration of this law, but I do believe it's a reasonable balancing of this previous provision against what is essentially 1990 developments of the tort law since the time this was passed. And I think it's an appropriate thing to do.
Representative Lowe?
Hands are going up everywhere. Respectfully disagree with that this, you know, this is out of sync and out of time. The other tort law and the OSHA law, the public safety law, and the worker safety laws all evolved along with the EOA. All evolved as they work together, they work in harmony, they work in tandem, and when the employment compensation laws were put into place in the 60s and then updated a little bit later, this wasn't removed from the books because it works in harmony with it. And I think that it would be very irresponsible of us policymakers to take this off the books and put a comparative neg standard in there and then cap the benefits at what's in this bill. I can't tell you how offensive this bill is to me. So I'm a no.
I was picking that up. Representative Werbelow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is an excellent bill for defense firms and for employers, but it's thumbing your nose at workers. And I want to read you something here. If you look at the bill, and I'm only talking to the point where you limit the non-economic damages, but the law says if there's any loss of life by reasons of violations of ORS 654.305 to 654.335, then this law applies. Now, what is 654.305 to 654.335? What it is, it says that owners, contractors, or subcontractors, or other persons having charge of this hazardous, we're talking about hazardous work, shall use every device, care, and precaution that is practicable to use for the protection and safety of life and limb. So what this contractor or this owner is going to violate that and not use everything necessary. Second, it says that those same people we just talked about shall make sure that all places of employment are in compliance with every applicable order, decision, direction, standard, etc. So when does this bill come into play? When you violate that rule. So we're going to let an owner, contractor, or whatever, violate this rule and basically not pay for it. The worker is going to bear the brunt of it by having the non-economic damages, which I strongly assert are of great value to the family, to the wife or the husband, whoever is the remaining spouse, and to their children. Thank you.
Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the things that Representative Werbelow touched on was so important to me, and I actually wrote it before she said it. I don't believe there should be a cap on the non-economic value of human life. Additionally, this law was created in 1910. So we've almost 90 years had ELA on the books. Workers' comp came into being in 1913, and it was left on the books. It was overhauled again and again in 95 when this legislature was controlled by the Republican Party, and still the ELA was left on the books because I assert this is always intended to be an alternative remedy. And why there's a push to pull it out now is beyond me. I suspect
that what we're going to do is see less attention to safety, and what we're finding is probably some people are using untrained workers who are getting injured, and it's causing costs to go up, and their employers are looking for a way to bring those down. Well, I'm not willing to do it at the expense of our workers. So I'm an absolute no vote on this bill. I think this is a bad policy.
I do wish to say one other thing for the record. Thank you very much. I noticed that the dash for amendments make it prospective instead of retroactive. But just, not that it's a direct conflict, but I think that you should know that a very good friend of mine's son was killed in that Portland airport accident because the business didn't keep the work site safe. And so I bring that emotional baggage to my vote because I've seen what this all, what unsafe work conditions can do to a family.
Okay, thank you. Anything else? Just for the committee's information, I've already had communication from the governor's office about this bill. I'm prepared to move this forward as an item of discussion. I think there will be continuing discussions with the governor's office, with the AGC, with AOI, and trial attorneys before this bill gets out of the building. It's one of these, again, where it's a House bill. We are well beyond the deadline for it. And I guess I see this as, as much as anything else as moving an item of discussion. The parties have indicated a willingness to discuss, in fact, forward. And so I'm not suggesting that that's going to bring any no votes on board with a yes vote for the bill, but do be aware that there is that dynamic of this, too.
Chairman, I'm sorry, I didn't quite understand what you said.
Well, I tell you, there's a
stay tuned.
That's right. Yeah, stay tuned. There is
a small four-letter word that starts with a V.
That's right. That has.
Oh well.
You're led to believe, Mr. Chairman, that the governor would veto this bill.
I have received a communication indicating to me that this bill has drawn the interest of the governor's office. Okay. Nothing overt, but. Representative Backlund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When my critics have criticized me in the past, at times it has been because they accuse me of thinking too much. And if thinking would cause injury or headaches, I would be severely injured at this point. So this bill has caused me to do a great deal of thinking. When I vote on this, I want you to know I've given a tremendous amount of thought and a great amount of consideration. So this has been one of those really tough ones for me.
Well,
and I'm not injured either.
And now we are all waiting with bated breath to see what that vote is going to be. let's find out. Is there any further discussion? Representative Edwards.
On something related that was brought up in testimony that Mr. Shiprock brought up, which I think is something, if this bill gets worked, I think it should be looked at. On the other side is this issue of the state contracting and how the issue of subs that the state seems to be bound by lowest cost bid, which could put more jeopardy on state projects for safety. So I thought, to me, that was a pretty interesting comment. He raised something, I think, whether this legislature addresses it, but I'd be interested in seeing that discussed at some point in this building.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And, in fact, I recall my response to that being legal counsel for a couple of public bodies. I would be surprised. I would be disappointed if that's the standard the state is applying in its contracting, because I'm not so sure it's a statutory problem, because the statute does refer to contracts to the lowest responsible bidder, and I have advised my public body clients before that responsible means responsible in more than one way, and I would hope that the state is not feeling itself bound to award contracts to contractors with a proven record of safety violations and risks to workers, that to me that would render that contractor an irresponsible contractor for the purpose of the public contract laws. But you're right, that's certainly something that ought to be followed with the bill.
I do need to make one other statement. My very brilliant, esteemed colleague, three seats down, has pointed out to me that I'm... Yeah, no, you do. We skip right over.
You're the brilliant. You're the brilliant and esteemed colleagues. One seat and two seats.
Not too far.
Love you guys too. In no way do I want my statements to be interpreted that I have assigned guilt or fault in a case currently before the court.
All right, thank you. Appreciate the discussion on this. Let's call the roll.
Representative Becker? Aye.
Representative Edwards?
No.
Representative Lowe?
No.
Representative Herbalow?
No.
Representative Walker?
No.
Representative Wells?
Yes.
Representative Williams?
Yes.
Representative Witt?
Yes.
Chair Sutterby?
Aye. House Bill 3605, as amended, goes before with a due pass recommendation. Representative Walker?
I will serve notice of a minority report, please.
Can I join in that?
And me too.
Hey,
guess what?
We only need two, but we got it. That's going to be number two. We're falling apart here.
Yeah.
That's all right. Pleased to have you do that. Representative Witt, do you want to carry this? Do you not want to carry it?
I will carry it.
I'm sorry. You don't have to carry it. I'd be happy to carry it. I'm sorry.
Whichever
I should have asked you before.
No, whichever.
Would you really? I mean, otherwise, I'd be happy to. I've got
it. Happy to carry it.
Okay.
Chairman, I'm counting on you speaking, too.
I will certainly speak to it.
Yes, will I.
Yeah, okay. Thanks very much. You're adjourned.